Blog Talk Radio.
One of you, you know, let you know how much we appreciate you. And again, we're Black Free Thinkers. We are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And this has proven to be a very interesting week. And, you know, as we grow, you know, the Black Free Thinkers family, you know, our media company here, you know, we appreciate all of you guys, and we thank you for being a part of the family, being part of our listener audience, and, you know, much appreciated, very, very much so appreciated. And we just kind of want to let you guys know that, you know, we're looking to expand Black Free Thinkers Media. We're trying to do some more things, coming and bring more things to you next year. So we're launching a fundraising campaign. I put the chip in in the room, the link to the chip-in page, and I posted it the other day on my wall. I will go ahead and post it on my wall again, but again, we're just asking, you know, if you can contribute, you know, please do. Please do, so that we'll be able to bring more programming to you besides, you know, the programs that we have now. We have a couple of more shows on the docket to be starting up soon. So, you know, again, this takes time, this takes research, and it's going to be more than just a radio program and some other things that we have planned. So, you know, it takes resources for us to put all of that together. So the chip-in is on the page, as well as the link in the chat room. In addition to that, if anyone wants to donate to Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, you can donate to us as well. It's donate@blacknonbelievers.org. You can PayPal it that way. And, you know, again, you know, there's a lot of things that we're trying to do, especially with Black Nonbelievers of Chicago. We're just trying to get a few things situated. We want to do some serious, you know, community outreach. And so it takes funds. It takes funds to even really get this started. And I've invested quite a bit on my end on both projects here. And so, you know, we're just asking for those, you know, who enjoy the program, who feel that, you know, you can contribute and you want to be a part of this, please do. Again, you know, Black Nonbelievers of Chicago was started January of this year, and Black Freethinkers was started August of last year, so we're only about a year and a half old. But, you know, we've made some strides. We've made some inroads with this, you know, program, this radio program here, and we want to bring more to you. So next year, you know, we plan to bring more programming to you, and we just want you all to be a part of it. And, again, we do appreciate you, and hopefully, you know, you can show us, you know, a little bit of love in return so that we can go ahead and bring more out here to you. And so thank you so much. But anyway, there's been a lot happening in the news. Let me introduce my co-host today. We have Nakomi and we have William on the line. Hello.
Oh, hey. Can you hear me? I didn't know Nakomi was there. Hey, how you doing?
Yes, here you go.
Hey.
Thank you, guys. Go ahead, hon.
Okay, I'm just making sure y'all can hear me.
Yes,
all right, I just got the chat room loaded up. Yeah, this is going to be a little... I didn't know Nakomi was on there. How you doing there?
How you doing? I'm good.
All right, I'm hanging in there. It's been the we were talking of before the show got on. It's been that busy week, that funky busy week where they throw curveballs at you.
Yeah. join the club. But you know what? You know, at the end of the day, you know, we made it to the end of the week. And here we go, enjoying one another, enjoying our, you know, listening audience here. And, you know, it's just so much happening, and especially this time of the year. You know, I'm not sure for other people, you know, but I know a few people. During this time of the year, transitioning into, you know, the winter season, it can take a toll. Then with some other people, it's their holiday season, you know. And especially if some of these people do not have friends or family that accept them for whatever reason, or, you know, their relationship with their family, friends are strained, or whatever the situation. And I mean, it may be a perfectly healthy, you know, relationship that they have with other people. It can be other extenuating circumstances. You know, there are some people, you know, they go into depression during this time of year. Suicide rates go up this time of the year as well. And so I just thought it was important that we address this, but not only, you know, focusing on the, you know, the believing community, but also talking to the non-believing community as well, you know, the atheist community, because, you know, we've had a couple of suicides in our community over the past year. And, you know, unfortunately, it was nothing that, you know, any of us could do. And, you know, definitely, you know, my heart goes out to those families and those friends that lost, you know, people that were important to them. And I just think that we don't talk about, you know, these topics enough, you know. And that's why if you go to the homepage, you'll see that I put a bunch of links up. And it says resources here, 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 and here. And there are several resources there. And I, yesterday, in the past 24 hours, I have posted so many resources on the Black Freethinkers profile page, and I'm like, I hope I'm not in anybody's closest friends list because their telephones probably were just going off. But I posted links to, you know, the HSRA to help you find a facility that can help you with, you know, checkups and well-being care, you know, for your physical body. I posted a link for HSA, and they help you with substance abuse and mental health care treatment and how to find facilities in your area. In many cases, these are free or it's on a sliding scale, so the cost will be minimal. And, you know, I put up links to the suicide and crisis hotlines, you know, call somebody. And I also put up a link to rational and secular programs. And on that particular page, it gave you several different organizations that are secular-based, so it's not faith-based, and you can be a part of these different groups, you know, whether it's for addiction or mental health, or in some cases, some people just need support. They just need someone to talk to, and they have different groups out there. You have Recovering from Religion. I put that link on the page as well. Grief Beyond Belief, That information is out there as well. Recovering from Religion, they have a secular therapist program. And so, you know, they will match you up with a therapist that is secular in nature, so you don't have to go through that 12-step program. I put up an article about that. Are 12 steps too many? And it talked about the spirituality behind, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous and how, you know, it puts too much pressure on, you know, addicts. So, you know, all of that information, you know, is on my page. And, you know, I would, you know, implore you to go and take a look at it, even if it's not for you. If you know someone who could use some information, all of that is there. I put up several different articles. One was about atheism has a suicide problem. And it goes in depth. And, you know, I would just ask you to read them. You know, atheism, depression, and meaning. Do atheists lead meaningless lives? Another one that I put up, but Christianity doesn't cure depression. You know, all kinds of links. So I would just ask you guys to go and just take a look at that. And, you know, in most of those links, they lead you to other links and more information out there. And, again, if you don't need it, just give it to someone who may need it. Even if they don't feel that they need it, just, you know, share it on your page. Share it with some people, you know. Maybe we'll save some lives. Maybe we'll help somebody. And I believe that's what this is all about, you know, trying to get the information out there to help people. And, you know, that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. And, you know, it's important that we do that. And, you know, just a brief definition on depression. And, you know, this is coming from the NIH website. And this is the definition for major depression, you know. But anyway, it says depression may be described as feeling sad, blue, unhappy, miserable, or down in the dumps. Most of us feel this way at one time or another for short periods. And it says true clinical depression is a mood disorder in which feelings of sadness, loss, anger, or frustration interfere with everyday life for weeks or longer. And so it gives you some causes, some instances, and some risk factors. And it says the exact cause of depression is not known. Many researchers believe it is caused by chemical changes in the brain. This may be due to a problem with your genes or triggered by certain stressful events. More likely, it's a combination of both. And it says some types of depression run in families. But depression can occur also if you have no family history of the illness. Anyone can develop depression, even kids. So, you know, these children out here, some of them, you know, are depressed. And I think I posted an article about how, especially in minority communities, how sometimes it's overlooked or the children aren't treated properly. And when I say treated properly, I'm talking about the treatment that they get when they do have mental health issues. And so you need to look into that as well. But it says, you know, the following may play a role in depression: alcohol or drug abuse, certain medical conditions, including underactive thyroid, cancer, or long-term pain. Underactive thyroid is also called hypothyroid, for those of you who are dealing with that situation. Sometimes with the hypothyroid, the underactive thyroid, some of the symptoms kind of look the same as depression, and it's kind of hard to differentiate between the two. And what I would tell some of you guys, because, you know, I deal with this, that's an illness that I deal with, do not let your doctor throw antidepressants at you like it's candy. Make them do their job. Make them do the blood work to find out if your TSH levels are where they should be. In many cases, it's a matter of just adjusting the medication to make you feel a little bit better. But first thing they'll try to say is that you're depressed, and that's not necessarily the case. Certain medications such as steroids, sleeping problems, stressful life events such as breaking up with, you know, your significant other, failing a class, death or illness of someone close to you, divorce, childhood abuse or neglect, job loss, social isolation, and especially in the elderly. You all make sure you check on your older relatives or the older people that live in your neighborhood that you know don't get very many visitors. You know, if you're not close to them like that, even if you can just you know, maybe anonymously drop off some things that you know they could use, like, you know, this older person, and, you know, that their funds are limited, they're on a budget or whatever. Even if you just drop off a card with a $20 gift card to the local grocery store, pharmacy, or whatever, to help them offset some of their, you know, bills. That's just something nice to do. With Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, once we get everything up and situated, one of the things that I wanted to do was an outreach program for some of the older people that are still living in their homes, but their homes are looking a little dilapidated. You know, starting a program, if we can't get the funds through community action to help them with the upkeep of their home, but at least trying to help them with, like, painting the outside of their homes or maybe cleaning out the gutters, things like that that they can't do anymore, and in some cases they can't afford. So, you know, we can't forget those people. We can't forget the people around us. People need help. People need help. And, you know, I just think that it's important that we remember that, that we don't get so self-absorbed in our lives that, you know, we overlook and forget the people around us. And Webin B, you know, gives some causes, main causes of depression. It says abuse. Past physical, sexual, or emotional abuse can cause depression later in life. Certain medications, for example, some drugs used to treat high blood pressure, such as beta blockers or reserpine, can increase your risk of depression. Conflict. Depression may result from personal conflicts or disputes with family members or friends. Death or loss. Sadness or grief from a death or loss of a loved one, though natural, can also increase the risk of depression. Genetics, a family history of depression may increase the risk. It's thought that depression is passed genetically from one generation to the next. The exact way this happens, though, is not known. And I talked a little bit about that Friday. But anyway, major events, even good events, such as starting a new job, graduating or getting married can lead to depression. So can moving, losing a job or income, getting divorced or retiring. Other personal problems, problems such as social isolation due to other mental illnesses or being cast out of a family or social group can lead to depression. Serious illnesses, sometimes depression coexists with a major illness or as a reaction to the illness. And again, substance abuse. Nearly 30% of people with substance abuse problems also have major clinical depression. So, you know, it's a lot more to it, but I would just ask you all to do some research behind that. And, you know, the other side to the program today, we're going to talk about suicide. You know, suicide is the taking of your own life. And so I just picked up an article on Psychology Today. And it's talking about the six reasons people attempt suicide. And the first one is they're depressed. And they say this, without question, is the most common reason people commit suicide. And severe depression is always accompanied by a pervasive sense of suffering, as well as the belief that escape from it is hopeless. And it's not hopeless. You know, there are resources, programs out there to help you. And if I don't know of anything, I will direct you to someone that can help you. And it's just as important. Again, guys, you know, if you have anyone in your life or you know of anyone that's suffering needlessly, you know, please get the information to them. So that was the first reason why some people attempt suicide. The second one is they're psychotic. And so it's talking about malevolent inner voices often command self-destruction for unintelligible reasons. Psychosis is much harder to mask than depression and is arguably more tragic. And it says the worldwide incidence of schizophrenia is 1% and often strikes otherwise healthy, high-performing individuals whose lives, though manageable with medication, never fulfilled their original promise. Schizophrenics are just as likely to talk freely about the voices commanding them to kill themselves as not, and also, in my experience, give honest answers about thoughts of suicide when asked directly. Psychosis, too, is treatable and usually must be treated for a schizophrenic to be able to function at all. Untreated or poorly treated psychosis almost always requires hospital admission to a locked ward until the voices lose their commanding power. And so that's the second reason. The third one, they're impulsive. And it says here that it's often related to drugs and alcohol. Some people become maudlin and impulsively attempt to end their own lives. Once sobered and calm, these people usually feel emphatically ashamed. The remorse is often genuine, but whether or not they'll ever attempt suicide again is unpredictable. And so it says they may try it again the next time they become high or drunk, or never again in their lifetime. And so it's just wild. So number four, they're crying out for help and don't know how else to get it. These people don't usually want to die, but do want to alert those around them that something is seriously wrong. They often don't believe they will die, frequently choosing methods they don't think can kill them in order to strike out at someone who's hurt them, but they are sometimes tragically misinformed. The prototypical example of this is a young teenage girl suffering genuine angst because of a relationship, either a friend, boyfriend, or parent, who swallows a bottle of medication, not realizing that in high enough doses, this medication can cause irreversible liver damage. And it's just, wow, you know, we got to pay attention to these things. And that's why I'm posting all of the links. If you can help someone, get the information to them. The fifth reason is they have a philosophical desire to die. The decision to commit suicide for some is based on a reasoned decision, often motivated by the presence of a painful terminal illness from which little to no hope of reprieve exists. These people aren't depressed, psychotic, maudlin, or crying out for help. They are trying to take control of their destiny and alleviate their own suffering, which usually can only be done in death. So, you know, they often look at their choice to commit suicide as a way to shorten the dying that will happen regardless. Wow. And number six is they've made a mistake. This is a recent tragic phenomenon in which typically young people flirt with oxygen deprivation for the high it brings and simply go too far. The only defense against this, it seems to me, is education. So those are six of the reasons from Psychology Today. There are other reasons as well. You know, that list isn't, you know, totally definitive, but, you know, it's just, it's important that, you know, we get this information out here and we help some people. You know, you got a lot of people out here that need assistance. And again, they may not need, you know, your financial assistance. They just may need for you to listen to them. So I just think it's important that, you know, we continue on, and we do that. And so, you know, again, you know, one of the bullet points that I had for this show today is, when did suicide become a sin for believers? Now, I know some people are going to say, well, why are you bringing that up? Well, the reason why I'm bringing that up is because, again, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do is educate people. And we just think it's important for people to understand where some of this comes from, because I've had some believers argue me down that suicide is a sin. And, you know, even though I don't advocate suicide or anything like that, you know, when trying to dispel some of the teachings that they believe, the indoctrination, you have to be able to give them facts. And basically, you know, it was in 364 A.D., when suicide was deemed an official sin in the church. But, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But just to kind of, you know, some interesting facts about the Roman Empire, you know, with Constantine. In 325 A.D., you know, Emperor Constantine made Sunday a day of rest, forbidding ordinary work. That's where that came from. In 361 A.D., the Roman Empire, from 361 to 363, they sought to restore paganism. From 363 to 364, they reestablished the Christian faith. And in 364, that is when they classified suicide as an official sin. And if you go and you do some research, you know, before 364, suicide was, you know, looked down upon, you know, but you weren't automatically damned and, you know, condemned to hell for committing suicide. But what happened was they had suicide cults. And what they would do is they would either antagonize, provoke people to kill them so that they would be martyred, or they would kill themselves outright. And it was too many people dying. As a matter of fact, the name of this cult, it was in North Africa, and they were called the Circumcilians. And, you know, they were a band of Berbers. And, you know, I'm going to read something from this book here. You know, I thought it was very interesting. This is called History of the Christian Church, and it's written by James Craig Robertson. And so, you know, they were talking about this particular cult over in North Africa, and, you know, it says that the appearance of the Circumcilians amongst this group, you know, it was just, they would basically walk around terrorizing everyone. And, you know, here it says, these were persons of the poorest class, ignorant of any language but the Punic. They derived their name from the practice of begging around the cells or cottages of the country people instead of earning a livelihood by regular industry. The accounts of them might be disbelieved as fictions of their enemies, were it not that later experiences forbids us to be hasty in rejecting statements of extravagances and crimes committed under the name of religion. Their zeal was often combined with excesses of drunkenness and lust, and in these sacred virgins of the party shared. Bands of both sexes roamed the country, keeping the peaceable inhabitants in constant terror. They styled themselves the Lord's champions. Their song of praises to God was heard, according to St. Augustine, with greater dread than the roaring of a lion. And so, you know, it's interesting here. It says, at first they supposed that our Lord's words to St. Peter forbade them from the use of swords, so they carried heavy clubs called Israelites, with which they beat their victims often to death. To these, however, they afterwards added not only slings, but swords, lances, hatchets, and other weapons of steel. But anyway, you know, the fury of this particular sect was directed at themselves as well as others. Sometimes they courted death by violently disturbing the pagan worship. They stopped travelers on the road and, with threats of killing them, demanded death at their hands. In the same way, they compelled judges who were traveling on their circus to hand them over to the executioners. Many drowned themselves, rushed into fire, or threw themselves from precipices. But hanging was a death which they eschewed, as they would have nothing in common with the traitor Judas. The more moderate Donatists disapproved and dreaded the excesses of the Circumcilians, you know, and it's just interesting, but councils of the sect condemned suicide, but the practice continued, and those who procured or perpetrated their own death were popularly honored as martyrs. So, you know, just to kind of give you a little bit of the history of that and, you know, where it came from, you know, that's when suicide was declared a sin. You know, and again, you know, suicide wasn't directed a sin until around 364 A.D. by Rome, and Rome instituted these policies. Before then, some Christians, you know, again, would attack travelers with sticks to get the travelers to kill them. It's just, it's interesting because, you know, they wanted to kill themselves so that they could go and be with Jesus. Unlike, you know, many of the Christians today, you know, they want to, it's just, it's interesting. So I just advise you all to go and read up on some of the history there. You know, so it's interesting. But, you know, Nakomi, William, what are some of your thoughts?
Nakomi?
I think a lot of times, like I said earlier in the chat room, people don't really know how to cope with a lot of things. And someone else just mentioned in the chat room as well that, you know, the term just snapping out of it. And, you know, before I actually hit certain levels in my life, that was one of my models where it was like, okay, you know, just don't think about it. You know what I mean? Whatever's bringing you down, you know, find a way to pull you up. And it's not always that easy. I mean, there's times where, you know, I want to snap out of certain, you know, molds and stuff, and what I find is that sometimes, and this is just for me personally, I have to allow myself to go through that wave a little bit and kind of cry it out and kind of uncover on my own what's really going on with me. For some other people, it's not that simple, of course. And the things that usually contribute to some of these things, it's amazing sometimes because, you know, sometimes it's directly in your family, you know. I have a good friend of mine who suffering from depression right now, and I make sure that I talk to this person on a regular basis because I feel like at any moment, you know what I mean, she can have one of those moments and just snap. And it wasn't until recently she expressed to me that depression actually runs through her family. She has a few siblings that are actually institutionalized because of it, and it's just really sad when you really get to the bottom of why some of these people, you know, are going through the things that they're going through. And what I'm finding more and more interesting is how it's directly related to, like, family, the way, you know, family and people that they love treat them when it comes to, you know, a level of accepting, whether, you know, they may be LGBTQ or maybe it's a relationship that, you know, the family doesn't approve of, or, you know, it just gets real interesting. I'm very careful with people that are undergoing certain issues because, you know, at any moment, you know, you can have a series of things that you go through and allow it to affect you in a way that can really bring you down. I remember it was thrown around after my mom died of how strong I was because of, you know, my interactions with her illness growing up as a child. But in reality, I was going through it. And it's like nobody knew it. You know, it had reached a point where I was just like, I don't think I really had the balls to kill myself, but I just wanted to die. And, you know, that was kind of life-changing for me because, you know, I never actually thought of my mom actually leaving here. As sick as she was, it was just like a shocker. But, and my family didn't really support me in a way that I thought that they would, and I really had to kind of uncover some things on my own. But sometimes people are just not that strong, and people need that support group, you know. Sometimes people walk around like they don't need nobody, and in actuality, that's not really true. So I just think that we need to do a better job at supporting each other and trying to accept where people are in their lives and try to help them, you know. That doesn't mean that you have to agree with any and everything that they're doing, but offer some kind of advice, an alternative, you know, as opposed to just talking down on them.
Exactly, and you're right. You're absolutely right about that, and that's the reason why I think it's important that we share these resources. And, I mean, if you know, if any of you all know of any more resources, throw it on my profile on Black Freethinkers on Facebook. Have no problem with that. But we have to get over the stigma, you know, the stigma of mental illness. We have to get over the stigma of depression. You know, we have to get over that. But in addition to that, one of the things to me is kind of a stigma is this strong person or this strong woman or the strong Black woman or whatever persona that's out there. It's okay to have weak moments. It's okay to cry. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to make a mistake. We all make mistakes, and we're all learning. It's okay. You know, you learn from it, and then you should know better the next time, and then you can help someone else in the event that, you know, something, you know, happens with someone else and you just need some counsel of some sort. But it really is okay. You know, we're supposed to show compassion, not, you know, ridicule or anything like that. And it's just unfortunate. And, you know, going back to what Nkomi was saying, you know, it runs in my family as well. And we have to deal with these quote-unquote family secrets. You know, there are illnesses that run in all of our families, especially in my family, that no one wants to talk about. No one wants to talk about it or tell you about it. And then, you know, several years later, after you think that you're losing your mind because, you know, all of a sudden all of these different illnesses are popping up, and then you'll have someone, oh, well, that runs in the family. Well, why didn't anybody tell me? This would have saved years of, you know, stressing my doctor out, stressing myself out, and we could have dealt with this particular issue. at the onset. So, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot.
And it's interesting,
you know,
that you said that, too, because what I'm noticing in the Black community, it's almost like seeking counseling is a sign of weakness. From what I see, you know, it's like, you know, nobody wants to be able to say or confront the fact that they're going through something, you know, especially if in the religious community, you know, they look to Jesus to pull them out of any and everything, you know, or whoever, you know, they believe in. It's not just, you know, Christians that do that. But, you know, I know in my family, it's like, I don't think anybody that I can think of off the top has had some type of therapy sessions to uncover things that they need to talk about. You know, I mean, I think you mentioned this on a few shows before with secrets and pains. People don't want to face some of the things that they've done in the past or admit, you know, some things that happened to them that's really kind of holding them back from living, you know, a more healthier life mentally.
Right. Right. And what do you think, Mario and William? What do you guys think?
I think for me, it's positive for me to be talking to you guys a lot here. So I figure, like, some years down the line, like, after my niece is, like, more independent and I'm not, like, helping raise her or anything, I'm not really going to have anything to do. And then I'm going to have to stop and think about all this stuff that I never talked to any psychologist or psychiatrist, like, when my mother expired in 93. And that was back in the time when... like my biological father, I don't know much about him, but I guess he was either closet gay or closet bi or something, and he went and got AIDS and gave it to her, and she died from it. I tend to say expired. I don't know why. For whatever reason I say that for, but yeah, she expired from it in 93, and I never went and talked to anybody or anything. It just got busy from there, you know, weaving in and out of the foster care system and changing schools and what have you. And, like, now I just stayed busy going into adulthood, and now, you know, I'm doing work and working with my niece and raising her up and doing these radio shows and running the household and having hobbies and friends. But at some point in time, I'm going to be, like, in my 40s, and I'm going to have a lot of time to think, and I'll probably have to go talk to one of those doctors, you know. And especially, like, my sister was one of those teenagers, like you were talking about earlier, just dropping a gang of pills down every couple of months. Have an episode and go to the hospital, get the stomach pumped and that whole business. And we actually never really talked about that. Yeah, still, it's 2012. This was back in 1997. We've never talked about that. But yeah,
wow.
It's going to reach a point where we're old and you didn't forget. So it's been an elephant in the room for a long time.
Right, and that's the good thing about, you know, us evolving. Being educated and informed, you know, and again, removing these stigmas, you know, maybe one day, you know, you'll be able to sit down and talk to her, you know, about that when she's comfortable with discussing it. But, you know, just kind of let her know that she's not alone, and, you know, there are many people out there that have done things like that and that there's help available. I don't know if she's received some counseling since then, but, whatever it was that led to that particular situation, you know, I hope she dealt with it, but if she hasn't, you know, it's never too late to go and talk to someone. And just because she goes and sees, you know, a therapist, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to put her on medication or anything like that, but if they decide that medication is the route that she needs to take, there's no shame in that either.
Yeah, we didn't either. We never talked to anybody. We just went right out of that foster care system, right into adulthood, and then here we are now, just working and bill paying, tax paying people, and never really had any of that that dialogue. I should throw it over to Mario there.
Oh, yeah. Growing up, you know, because I kind of grew up poor and on welfare and everything like that, you know. And I've related before that my dad wasn't there. My mother was drugs and gangs and alcohol, stuff like that. And my grandparents had limited education. So having no older siblings, I didn't have anybody to talk to. You know, I just pretty much had to muster through a lot of stuff and try to deal with it as best I can and be some type of example for my younger siblings and whatnot. And a lot of times, man, it could be a pain in the neck, you know, and especially when you don't have anybody to cry to, and your mom is just, you know, you're having to go pick up your mom because she's getting arrested for something, and she's in there nutting up because she's about to get arrested and everything. And you know, the things that, you know, you know, I never told anybody this, but I actually almost started selling dope with my mom. You know what I'm saying? And that's how out of touch she was with us. She wasn't trying to be our mother. Well, it seemed like she would alternate. It seemed like she would go from being friend to mother, and, you know what I'm saying, and never really figure out which one, you know, was the more appropriate title to take. And everything. I guess in one time she would give up on one and try to fit into the other. And everything. I did end up actually going to a psychologist when I was 18 who put me on antidepressants, which I'm still on now because nobody told me that, you know, I was probably should have came off of them by now, but that's neither here nor there. But at the same time, if you're going through stuff and you have all these thoughts in your head, depression can be like, it's like a dark room in which you're sitting in this room and it's like nobody can see you and you can't see out. You're just sitting there just thinking to yourself. And a lot of times that's your biggest problem, is that you're thinking so much. Your own thoughts become your worst enemy, and next thing you know, you just, everything becomes an issue and it compounds upon every other issue, and you know, it's like it's hard to deal with, it's hard to get out and everything. And I don't know how I've avoided the idea of committing suicide. I mean, I think I've more so had an apathy to life than anything, you know what I'm saying, in which, you know, like I'm, like I walk outside at night and everything, and I walk down the street at night, you know, I just don't, if something happened, you know, I'd be like, oh well. You know, I didn't even imagine a scenario in which, like, I'm jumping, somebody put a gun in my head, and I'm like, okay, you gonna do it or not, man? You know, but I've never actually come up with the idea of committing suicide myself.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, you know, and yeah, the isolation, you know, that doesn't help, you know, and we do need to reach out, but you know, it's just interesting, you know, more information is becoming available. We have more people willing to, and more open to the information that's out there. We have a caller on the line from 404. Raina, you're live as well. 404, may we ask the caller?
Yes, Stanley Scott out of Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, Mr. Scott. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you today and your guests?
We're good, sir.
We're
fine. Thank you so much.
We're doing well, man.
When time get the best of you, take a walk, plant a tree, or look for a way to help someone else. It's a good way to remove depression from your mind or suicide, because everybody matters. But sometimes we forget that. We get so caught up into depression that we think there's nothing else we can do. But that's when you reach out to help someone else, volunteer, take a nice walk, look around in your community and see what you can do. Get involved in something that matters. And it doesn't have nothing to do with how much money you have, where you come from, what you've been through, or your race. Find a way to give back. That's the best way to rebuild your self-esteem, to feel good about yourself. But as I deal with it all the time as a civil rights activist, with the murder rate that we have today in the African-American community, a lot of it is because the people have little self-worth and think that nobody cares. But there's a lot of people out here in the world that care about people. We just have to reach out sometimes. It's like when you're in a hole and you need someone to throw you the rope. You have to jump for the rope. Don't wait till the rope come all the way down to you. Reach for the rope, because there's always someone out there reaching out to help others. But any time that you're feeling bad and you see there, you think there's nowhere, look for things to do for someone who may be in, have less than you or need your helping hand or your word of encouragement. because sometimes when you're dealing with depression, all you need to do is make it one more day.
Exactly. Exactly, and you're right. And
you have to be careful about telling people that they need to do is go out and help somebody else when they're depressed, because there is something called compassion fatigue. You can get tired of helping other people. So,
and that's true. She said you can get tired from, you know, tired from helping other people. Compassion fatigue. You know, it's important that we get out there and we help other people. And that does make us feel better in some regards. But, you know, I know from personal experience, you know, when I get out here and I help and I help and I help and I overextend myself, and when I need someone to help me, you know, whatever regard, and I can't find anyone that can help me, you know, in most cases just listen to what I have to say, then, yeah, you know, she's right. You get compassion fatigue. And then you get to a point where you don't want to help anyone. You don't want anyone to help you because no one was there when you needed them to be there. But then you also don't want to overextend yourself sometimes because, you know, you can't help anyone if you can't help yourself. So, you know, I believe that's part of it as well. You know, yeah, help others, but learn how to recognize the symptoms and issues that you're having, and not be ashamed to reach out and say that you need help as well. But, you know, you made some very good points. Yeah, it is important that we get out there in the community and help out. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there that feel that they're worthless and that no one cares. And you're right, there are plenty of people out here who do care. And that goes back to, you know, some things that I've spoken on in the past, how we need to really get together and get in the community and show some of these people that we do care, because, you know, a lot of the violence, you know, that we see, you know, is projection, and a lot of these people are angry and bitter, you know, and in some cases very legitimate reasons, but it's important.
Well,
and,
a lot
know,
of
and, go ahead, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Well, a lot of it is because of misinformation. Is one thing. Second here, everything here must be done in moderation. Now, also, that you can also,
mm-hmm.
also be out there helping all the wrong people, too. Who
That's
people,
true.
People that just want to take advantage of it. But one of the most important things here, when we talk about issues in people's lives, we must sometimes move ourselves away from it, because they're always the individual situation, and then they're the collective. What I'm talking about is collective. There's
yes,
not an answer for. There's not one answer for all. No such thing as that. So you
right.
have to find what works best for you. So you do things in moderation, but the most important thing is what I see out here. I see too many people trying to help people who are not worthy of being helped. And then they get upset.
I think
when
someone unworthy is being helped.
Let me explain that to you. Someone are worthy of they have no matter how much you do for them, they continue to go down the same road to failure. They continue to depend
well,
on you.
There's any number of reasons that could be true, but I mean, I understand how frustrating that can be with certain people, and you know, for some people, we do have to kind of love them from a distance, or keep our distance and not extend ourselves to them as much. But that doesn't, I don't think that you can really say that every, like there's, that anyone is beyond helping. You know what I mean? Somebody somewhere at some time will say something that will help them. No, you just saying, okay, well, go ahead. You're saying,
it's different situations. Yeah, different situations, different people, you know, different mandates and different dictates. And, you know, each situation is different. And, you know, yeah, it can be frustrating if you're helping someone, you know, you're continuously helping them over and over and they're still making the same mistakes. So they haven't learned whatever it is they need to learn. But that does not mean that they're unworthy of help. I mean, let's just say, you know, someone is a drug addict, and for some odd reason, they keep going back to the drugs. I guess the question at that point to me is, why are they relying on the drugs? So, you know, instead of, you know, spending money to throw them in expensive rehabs, why don't you try to help them get the counseling and find out what it is that's causing them to want to use the drugs? Were they abused as a child? I mean, it can be a number of extenuating circumstances there, and I'm just using that. That's just a general example there. But, you know, there are some people, you know, out there that do not know how to express themselves, so they can't express their emotions. And in some cases, with the way some of us were brought up, we were taught not to seek help from other people. You know, we were taught to keep everything in the house, not to share our information with other people, and to only rely on our family and ourselves. And then when it gets to the point where you can't rely on your family or even yourself, some of these people don't know how to go out and ask for help. You know, and that's the reason why, again, we're putting the information out there and hoping that people will be able to utilize, you know, the information and get some of the help we need. Because I don't believe that, you know, I don't believe that people are hopeless or worthless. You know, there are some people that, you know, I won't deal with, but it's just that I can't deal with them. That doesn't mean that someone else can't deal with them and they can't help them. So, you know, it's just, you know, interesting. Yes, sir.
Do you guys think that in some cases, and this, you know, I kind of was thinking about a number of things when he actually mentioned that, because I found myself kind of, you know, going off the deep end trying to help a close friend at a particular time. And it took about 6 years before we actually came back in contact. And one of the things that she mentioned was that it did her some justice by losing everybody that loved her, because
my mom said something.
Yeah, it was interesting because, I found she had a drug addiction, and she was just going through a number of things. And I can usually ride things out. And that was like the first case where I just didn't know what to do. You know what I'm saying? I felt like I was putting myself in danger by being around her. And so I just had to remove myself. And, you know, that was during the time where I was fairly religious, so I just kind of left it up to God at the time. But she actually went into rehab and got herself together and ended up going back to school. But I never forgot what she said the first time we talked after those years. And, you know, sometimes I think people need that tough love. You know, I don't want to say that, you know, in some cases you can't just save some people, although to a certain extent I kind of believe that, because you have to, in a way I feel like you have to kind of want the help in order to really get the help that you need. And if you don't want it, who am I to say, who am I to force it upon you?
Right.
You know,
I like to jump right in there. I'm sorry.
And I can definitely agree with you on that, because I'm talking about decades of dealing with my mom and her alcohol, her drugs, and gangs, and going, disappearing for weeks at a time. We not knowing if she's alive or dead, you know what I'm saying? Prison, jail, rehab, halfway houses. I mean, you name it, she's been there. And it's like, you do kind of get that, what you say was, you know what I'm saying, compassion fatigue or something like that. It's like, I can't help you anymore. I'm going to have to do something hard, and that means I'm going to have to ignore you. I'm going to have to turn my back on you, and maybe you'll get it then. And my mom actually said something. She's like, if mama had left me in jail instead of trying to help me out as many times, I think that maybe I'd have probably dealt with it a lot better if I'd have been forced to just accept the responsibility. And even the judges in Conyers, Georgia, kept giving her a lot of breaks until finally the judge had to send her, and she did some hard time. And it's like, it almost snapped her out of it, but she's still goofing off a little bit now.
Yes. Well, I have found out as a civil rights activist for 40 years here, sometimes the people closest to us, we cannot help. What we can do, though, we can help other people, and sometimes by helping others, it reciprocates right back to the people we need. We're trying to help in our immediate family, because sometimes we can't always speak to them. We cannot always help them. I'm talking about something that I know for a fact when dealing with my son. I went to five of my friends, who male friends, and asked them would they come speak to my son. Not one of them came to speak with my son. But sometimes what we have to do is help others who may be in a similar situation, who may be open to what we have to say. And as they progress and change their life, transform their life, they're able to come back and help us with our personal issues concerning a family member or with ourselves. But one thing I like to say here is that one of the biggest problems with most people is the value system, how they look at themselves. If you do not have a certain level of value for yourself, you will allow a lot of things to happen to you that you can control or change. But if you don't have a certain amount of value for yourself, it's hard to make a change.
That's, you know, and I understand where you're coming from. One of the issues that I've seen is, you know, and you're right with the value system, you know, self-respect, self-esteem. You know, some people have not been taught life skills. They don't understand. In some cases, their parents don't even understand. And you can't teach someone something that you don't know. And again, you know, coping mechanisms, you know, Mario spoke about that earlier. And you're correct. You know, when it goes to sometimes you can't help the people that are closest to you because they're not going to receive it, they're not going to hear it. And you have to go outside and maybe, you know, eventually it'll come back around and maybe one of those people could then take time out to talk to someone that's close to you and show them, you know, they were able to overcome whatever obstacles or issues and, you know, maybe help them. Because this is someone who understands the situation that may have gone through the same thing. So, you know, that's important as well. But, yeah, you know, it all goes back to we, you know, whatever happened to the mentality that, you know, we are here to help one another. We are here to help each other and to build each other and edify one another. You know, things have changed. Things have changed to, you know, we have a lot of narcissism, a lot of self-absorption, a lot of people that are only looking out for themselves and not caring about anyone else and have no problem stepping on other people or using other people to get what they want. A lot of things have changed over the years, and it just seems as though we're coming back full circle. We're coming back full circle, and, you know, people are looking around, and they're like, well, what do we do? What do we do? But then, you know, in the same breath, no one really wants to do anything. You know, and when I say no one, I'm talking in general. Because, I mean, there are some people out here that do care and that are helping. But, you know, it's like pulling teeth with some people to try to get them to get out into the community and to do things and to help. And just, you know, and when I say help, I'm not talking about going in your pocket and giving half your paycheck. I'm not talking about, you know, getting out there every day and neglecting your family. Sometimes it's about getting out there once a month, handing out some flyers. You know, even though some people may look at you and laugh, they'll take the flyer home, lay it down on the table, and they may leave it there for someone else, or they may leave it there for themselves. They may be feeling good right now, but they know they've been in situations in which they felt bad or their situation, you know, was in dire straits, and that information may come in handy. So, you know, again, again, when you were talking about a value system, that is correct. And, you know, everybody has their own individual value system. It's just what do you place as important? What's a priority to you?
Yes, well, you can also, if the time comes when you're not feeling your best, go out there and plant a tree. Go out there and start a garden. Go out there and do something that will add some benefit to your life. Something you can have complete control over, something you can grow. We must get back into the spirit of life, and the spirit of life is going back to nature. And not, if we, when you were talking earlier about the pharmaceutical company and they're putting you on drugs here, well, there's a lot of herbal products out there that can help you.
Okay, which one?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which ones? You said a lot, so you should be able to name which ones.
Yes, I will. I did not have that part prepared, but one thing is,
well,
I
mean,
if
you can
this.
Say a lot,
no,
like that's
me,
a quantity.
I can do this.
A quantity,
I just put it simply here as far as changing your diet. Yes. But I can name one. The one I've been taking over 20 some years is detox. I detox on a regular basis. Yes.
Detox doesn't work. We'll talk about that on a future show on the RSSD, but detox does not work. But continue.
So we will make sure we invite you to that show, Mr. Scott, because Raina always talks about homeopathy and herbs and, you know, all of that, and she's pretty knowledgeable.
And don't get me wrong, sometimes some of these things do actually have some efficacy, but a lot of them don't. I mean, if you want to talk about an herbal supplement that actually is used in a mental health context, St. John's wort is used in a mental health context. But you have to understand something about drugs and herbs. Drugs, herbs, and supplements, they all work on the same receptors. They all are chemicals. All of them are chemicals. So you can't think, like, by going over to a supplement, you're getting away from something chemical. All of these things are chemical. All of them. Okay? And you may need a special dose of St. John's wort. You may need less. You may need more. I mean, all of it, and all of it over time, has to be reevaluated for its dose. Because over time, your body gets accustomed to a certain dosage, and it's no longer effective. So let's just get out of our minds that somehow by eating this plant, we're doing better. That's not necessarily the case. Natural doesn't mean good, and unnatural doesn't mean bad, and really, those are just ridiculous categories when you're talking about the human body, which doesn't really care about anything except what molecules are going into it. I'm sorry, I just had to get that out there.
It's incorrect, but we'll see that for a different show, as you said.
Yes, sir. Yes. And, yeah, you know, we'll definitely, you know, cover that on another show. We actually have a call on the line. I think 314, are you there?
Yeah, this is Bianchi. How are you doing today?
Good, Bianchi. How are you today?
You know, as people that I was just listening to the conversation, it seemed like a lot of folks have these personal problems. But if those who, I heard some folks saying that they've tried working with other individuals and it don't seem to go any place. But I would suggest, well, if you're able to work with some children or even animals. I have, my grandfather had this uncanny attachment to animals. And apparently I do too. And I actually have dogs that would bring dogs to my house that need some sort of help. There's one dog that shows up every now and then, and it seemed like he would bring a dog, just like the other day. This female dog he brought by the house, and I said to myself, I don't need any pets, so I just fed it. And, you know, it's funny how those things work, but they do, and it's very real. But I would suggest people looking at look beyond human beings trying to give help to and attach on to an animal or even plants. And
right.
maybe
right.
that would help you in that depression.
Exactly.
That's right.
I was gonna say, you know what, Bianchi, this is like the first time I've heard you say something that I almost agree with, or I kind of agree with. Actually, having an animal does help your health, can help your overall health and well-being. It can help you lower your blood pressure. It can,
right.
you know, make you relax. You know, all of those things are true. But some people say that, some people have even said that it may even help you live a longer life. That I don't know if I agree with, but it can certainly take your mind off of things, taking care of an animal. They can kind of mellow you out.
Well, you know, being right. with animals can help you live a longer life because they can help you avoid things that would take your life. Becoming involved in accidents and going, stepping on down power lines and things like that. And I heard you mention something about fast. You know, I fast 4 times a year, 40 days at a time. It does work for me. And
That's right.
People that have tried it. But, there are herbs okay, out there that work also, too. But anyway,
okay,
I just wanted to add that in.
Well, that was a great point, you know, because, you know, some people, you know, especially if they're feeling particularly lonely or what have you, you know, sometimes, you know, having a pet can assist them with that. There are actually programs out there in which, you know, you can volunteer and help them train pets or, you know, soldiers coming back to this country, help them train pets for blind people, different things. Those are ways that you can, you know, give some time back because, you know, we have soldiers in our community. We have, you know, blind people. We have people in need. We have some older people because there are programs out there that give animals to, you know, senior citizens. And, you know, they help with the upkeep and the food of the animal as well. And so, you know, if that's your thing, you're good with it. It's a lot of ways that we can give and we can help. But again, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about a little bit more is, and go into, and, you know, thank you guys for your input. That was great, and you made some great points, you know. But, again, overcoming the stigma, especially of depression, mental health, and issues like that in our community because, you know, again, there's no shame in seeking help. There's absolutely no shame in seeking help and, you know, do not allow, you know, people to make you feel as though there, you know, are issues with that. Because in many cases, at least in my experience, people, you know, that I see teasing others about whatever situation, you know, wait a little bit and that person is doing the same thing they were teasing that individual about. So, you know, again, it's, they're dealing with their own issues. They're projecting. And, again, getting over a lot of these stigmas, you know, getting people to the right resources. And, again, with the Affordable Care Act, you know, it does cover mental health issues. And, unfortunately, in a lot of our states, they've cut the resources to mental health care facilities and programs. And so, you know, you still have people out here that need help. You have more people being added to the role, but then there are less doctors and less resources available. So, you know, it's just important that we remember these things and that we get out here and, you know, we start lobbying our legislators and people like that so that they can invest more money into health care, not only mental health care, but, you know, also physical health care. But, you know, we have the Affordable Care Bill, and I have to read into it a little bit more to see exactly, you know, what it fully entails. You know, does it entail dental and all of that information? And then we can pass that along to people and start encouraging them to go to the doctor because, you know, at least in my experience, the only time we really went to the doctor is when something was ready to fall off the body or you couldn't pick yourself up off the floor. So, you know, I had to teach myself some things as an adult, you know, and I'm trying to help some other people to avoid some of the issues because we just have to do better. So, there you go. So, you know, our call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. You can also Skype into the show. When you come on the page, you'll see a big blue S. Click that and then hit 1 to let us know that you're there, that you want to speak with us. But, you know, again, going back, you know, it's important. And, you know, we've lost a couple of people in our community. And, you know, again, I don't want to see us lose anyone else, which is why I put the information out there. You know, just every once in a while, every so many months, I'll just barrage you with information out there. And especially, like I said, we're transitioning into winter. And so it's usually this time of year, you know, the cold statistics show that, you know, depression and suicide, you know, rises this time of year. And hopefully we can help someone else by getting the information to them. That would be great, you know. And again, going back to, you know, the LGBT bullying, you know, it's, you know, we just had a young man that passed away, in Chicago. He was killed, And, you know, they're trying to say that it was gang-related or mistaken identity. But, you know, their family, the young man's family, you know, believes that it was because he was a member of the LGBT community. And this was a young guy. I think he was about 17, 18, somewhere in there. And it's a lot of bullying of LGBT, you know, Q, youth. And on that suicide hotline, you know, it has the information for that as well. We need to overcome a lot of these phobias. We need to overcome a lot of these stigmas because we're just hurting ourselves and hurting our communities, which is making it more difficult for us to rebuild or even build up certain aspects of our community. And we have to do better. We have to definitely do better and help one another. And so it's just interesting. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I'd like to say one thing before I go. The most important thing here, if we want to change that paradigm, we must cut off that TV. Especially with African Americans, anytime you see so many negative things about you all the time in the news and TV programs, it has an effect on you. It has an effect on our whole community. We must move away from TV and get more into maybe reading or doing something else more positive in our lives here to build our self-esteem as far as a community. We must try to say positive things to each other, and we need to be honest with each other also. But we definitely need to get away from denial and apathy. For the last 40 years, that's been our biggest downfall, denial and apathy. And we must look up instead of looking down all the time, too. But one of the things that can have a major impact on us right away is to get away from TV. I do not see too much benefits in TV. If anything, we should embrace the library and our community more than we do as far as TV. It will have an overall effect on education, family, health, and prosperity if we look at less TV and get more involved in family. You know, this is a great discussion. I will continue to listen in.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Scott. And, you know, we appreciate you and your comments there. And, you know, I will agree, you know, some people just watch absolutely too much television. But also I wish that they had more educational television out there. And some of the educational television that's out there, unfortunately, is on cable. And many of these people can't afford, you know, for the extended cable services. I remember when television was free, but that's another story. But thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm going to put you on hold here, okay?
Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes. Well, no, that's not a true statement because you always have PBS. That's why the power structure want to eliminate PBS. PBS is one of the only network that allowed you to see the positive lifestyle of everyone, give you history, education, that is very much needed in America today. But the powerful who want to control your mentality want to eliminate PBS.
Well, PBS is an excellent station, that's one, but they have more on cable television, you know, and with PBS, you have to be able to time it properly as far as, you know, certain educational programs that are out there. Because, you know, especially if you have children, you know, again, they're attacking Big Bird and all of those people. But there are some educational programs that are out there 24/7 for children. Now, I don't feel that the television should raise your child. And that's one of the issues that I've seen, you know, in our community, that people will set their children in front of that television, either a video game system or a bunch of nonsense. But I'm saying that there are other television stations that can, you know, educate and edify your child's mind. But, again, it's on cable. And the only way to get it is pay for it. Right. So, you know, and again, if they attack PBS, and, you know, only a small percentage of PBS's budget comes from the government, but it does help. And, you know, one of the Republicans' issues with that is that the merchandising on PBS brings in, you know, a generous amount of money, but, you know, they want to talk about that, but yet they don't want to talk about paying $400 for a hammer that they bought from a family friend that owns a hardware store that doesn't sell to anyone but the government. and they get a kickback from that. But that's another story. But you know, basically, things that are available that will educate and inform, you know, economically disadvantaged, educationally disadvantaged. It seems like they're trying to take a lot of those programs away. But, you know, a lot of these children today don't necessarily watch PBS. But that's another story. But, yeah, you know, again, going back into the community, and that's the good thing about the Internet. Even though some people think the Internet is a bad thing, the Internet can be a good thing. We can take the Internet. And, you know, one example is Khan Academy on YouTube. He took different subjects, and he created a YouTube channel. And it's like a school. Kids can sit down and actually learn about the different subjects and be educated, you know, on the Internet. You know, and there are programs out here for people that are economically disadvantaged for them to get the Internet either for free or for minimal cost. But, again, a lot of these people don't know that these programs are out here. So that's the reason why it's important that we share this information. As a matter of fact, I'll post some of that a little bit later, as to how people can get, you know, free Internet or free Internet. And in Chicago, they're implementing a program where it's going to be free wireless across the city. So it should be interesting, you know, how that goes. But, you know, that's how it is. But, yeah, you know, hey, guys, you know, like I said, you know, it's important that we, you know, talk about these things. And like I said, overcome, you know, these stigmas. And in some cases, overcome expectations, unrealistic expectations from others. And, you know, it was an article that I posted about how, especially for some people, in particular public figures, so, you know, you'll have your celebrities out there. And anytime they make a mistake or they walk out the house and the makeup and clothes aren't perfect, that, you know, they're publicly humiliated because they're human and they're fallible and they have flaws. But on the other hand, you know, when they do admit these things, you know, you'll have people saying that they're weak. And then on the other hand, you'll have other people say, well, why didn't they get any help or why didn't they ignore it? I mean, it's kind of like a catch-22. And it's not only with, you know, these celebrities. This happens with everyday people. You know, it's just interesting, you know, some of the expectations that we place on one another. But, you know, again, that's how things go, and that's why it's important that, you know, we have the support groups out here and that we continue to, you know, share the information for one another. You know, so William, Mario, what do you guys think?
I wanted to, if I could steer into another lane. I saw in the chat room where they were talking about that karma existing. You know, I don't think karma or anything like that exists, but I think that in small communities, like a classroom or a small neighborhood, I don't know if any of you grew up in small neighborhoods or big cities, but like giving around can help. Like you have a guy that's good at fixing toilets and somebody over here that's good at building a deck, and then people just continue to do things for each other around the community. Like at one time, I think it was around like 1989, somebody's son was a teenager, and he could just mow everybody's lawns for a couple of dollars and go buy his own school clothes. So it's like it's not karma happening, but it's if you give to someone else, they have something that they can give back around, and it forms a circle. But I live in the city now. I don't see that at all. Geez, we're all just a bunch of solo warriors out here.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I don't believe in karma either. I don't believe in sowing and reaping. I don't believe in anything like that. I believe in justice. That's pretty much it. But, yeah, you know, it sounds like you're talking a little bit about bartering. So, you know, in some cases, you know, someone is a good mechanic. They can do some work on your car for you, but you're a plumber, so they need some help in their house with, you know, some bad plumbing. You can help, and that's how people used to help each other, you know. But also in addition to that, again, you know, some of the programs out here for the seniors, you know, get some people to come in and volunteer and help them because, again, they're living on a limited budget in many cases. And, you know, and even, you know, not even seniors, sometimes some of the younger folks that are trying. and trying hard to maintain and live and, you know, build up their families. Sometimes they need help as well because, you know, contrary to popular belief, not everybody in America is rich, you know. So, you know, it's just interesting. But, you know, there are some people that do live above their means. And that goes back to what I'm saying about educating the community, teaching some life skills, teaching some coping mechanisms. Because in some cases you have people trying to conform and live up to an image that was created by other people. And most of those other people can't even afford to live up to that image. But, you know, again, keeping up with the Joneses, you know, these are contributing factors. And these are things that we definitely, you know, we need to talk about. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's something I do see. I didn't, you know, I'm going to comparing the city to my little town in Spanaway again, like just the name brand clothes. Like, my niece is lucky she's not my daughter because she would not have all these name brand clothes. You don't need it. You're just going to get taller and grow out of it. Get that generic stuff and save some money. You know, and there was, you know, nobody was embarrassed about that. It was like, yeah, you know, I got my Kmart Spaldings on. But, you know, when I was 12 and I was able to go do some odd jobs for old people, get up and go get a pair of fancy Nikes from Ross, as
right.
I still do today.
Oh, well, see, I remember when you used to be able to get tennis shoes or gym shoes and clothes at the grocery store. You know?
Oh, goodness.
I forget, Pro Wings. You know, I'm telling my age, but you used to be able to get them at the store. And, you know, if we were to stop with a lot of that, you know, what I call stunting and trying to impress people who don't matter, you know, we'll be able to save more money and do more things for ourselves and do more things in the community. And, you know, it's just interesting, you know, how we've deviated from some of the values that were instilled in us. But, I mean, I even see it with some of the older people, and this is nothing new because some of the same mentality was, you know, around when I was, you know, much, much younger. And so it's just that it seems to be a little bit more pervasive now.
Yeah, you see people still trying to hang on to that last little bit of hip-hop. Like, my boss is 47, and he still puts product in his hair and spikes it up, and it's not looking the same. Like, your face is starting to droop, but you got, you know, you look like you're going to the first day of school. Just doesn't want to accept that old man in him. And
Mario,
then, like me, oh, yeah, Mario.
No, we're finished. So,
Mario.
You know, it's your... Mario's on... Oh, Mario dropped. Sorry about... No, he didn't.
Oh.
Well, anyway, so, yeah, it's interesting. You know how that all works. Yeah, it's about acceptance. Self-acceptance, acceptance of other people, and that's part of the issue as well, you know... with a lot of people, some of the issue is, you know, we have people that aren't accepting people as who they are and where they are, and that's part of the problem. You know, we have to stop placing certain expectations on people in regards to them living their lives the way that we feel that they should live their lives. You know, again, if it's a mistake to make, it's theirs to make. We can give the information, we can put it out there, but you can't make anyone do what you want them to do. You can't make anyone feel or think the way that you want them to feel or think, because they're grown, and even though some of the decisions may be the wrong decisions, it is their decision to make. And it's just interesting, but, you know, gone, you know, are the days in which, you know, it seems as though we were all accountable for one another to a certain degree. Those days are gone. And I don't believe we'll ever see those days again, unfortunately. But, you know, part of it is, you know, one of the issues now is, you know, people being accountable and responsible for themselves. And so it's just interesting, and we need to do better. But, you know, again, going back to, you know, the subject matter in and of itself, you know, suicide. Suicide, you know, increases this time of the year, And, you know, if you know of anyone and they need help, you know, reach out to them. It's just, it's important. And like I said, in the past 24 hours, I've put so much information on my page. It's enough for everyone. But, you know, some of the information here for seasonal effects on suicide rate, it says, you know, research on seasonal effects on suicide rate suggests that the prevalence of suicide, you know, says here is greatest during the late spring and early summer months, despite the common belief that suicide rates peak during the cold and dark months of the winter season, which is interesting because, you know, you hear more about it this time of the year. But it goes back to something someone said, you know, in the chat room that, you know, people feel as though they have to spend a certain amount of money or do certain things this time of year, that, you know, they tend to do some things that, you know, the rest of us feel are foolish or feel, you know, that goes against, you know, what we believe. So it's just, it's interesting. It's interesting, you know, how all of this works. And, you know, how it works in our community. So, anyway, you know, I just thought this was an important subject, you know, for us to discuss today. And, you know, we got some information out there. Hopefully the information will help some people and people will be able to move on. And, you know, one of the questions that I asked is why do people turn to suicide? And I gave some of the reasons a little bit earlier, and I posted those articles earlier. Or if I didn't, I have to look again, and I'll post them a little bit later. But, you know, there are resources out there. There are people out here that care. So, like, they reach out, and definitely, you know, we'll reach back. And people need to understand that. So.
And don't get jaded by it, you know, like a... you know, bringing up this show, it reminded me to, you know, don't get jaded by this because it's not happening right near you. Like, it's not happening in my household or probably not in my neighborhood or maybe in my neighborhood. Like, I literally don't know the names of any of my next door neighbors. You know, like, it's happening and it's real. And you never know. It could be someone in your household that's thinking about that. And this show also made me think about an old interview from 1995 with a rapper that died, Christopher Wallace. He called himself Notorious B.I.G. when he was rapping, and he was talking about committing suicide and how he said it would just get rid of these earthly problems. And, like, he didn't even say he was atheist or agnostic or anything. He just said, I don't care where I go. I'll be laying up in heaven or laying up in hell. Either way, I'll just be laying up and won't have all these problems out here. And I wonder about that. Like, are those people that just want to die because they're tired of life? Like, I've had all the bad experiences, all the good experiences. I've done everything I'm interested in. And, you know, maybe I'm in my late 40s, early 50s. Do I want to go on to my 70s? Is it going to be boring? Like, does that mentality exist? Or there's some people that just, like, I feel like wrapping it up. Party's over.
There you go.
I never really hear anybody talk about that. Like, there could be just that I'm bored suicide.
Oh, but, yeah, Nakomi, there you go. You're on.
Okay, I didn't know if I was live or not. You literally just brought up a point that I just wanted to mention and bring up because I feel like there are some people that are just tired of life. And some people think that it's counterproductive to kind of, you know, I'm not, you know, a fan of, you know, egging on people to commit suicide or anything like that. I definitely, you know, want to get that straight. But there's some people, and I've had discussions with friends that just do not care to, you know, continue life after they've reached a certain point for whatever their reasons are. And I thought that was a different dynamic to bring up. Because it's something that some people are uncomfortable with discussing with others, you know, especially, you know, if they fear being judged for it or whatever. But, you know, I had a good friend of mine who was just like, you know, once I get to a point where I can no longer do for myself and I'm not healthy or if I don't have any, you know, if I don't see the point of kind of living anymore, like I'm good with just, you know, checking out at, you know, early 60s. And
yeah, I mean,
like, this kind of interesting.
I was going to say, I understand, like,
from the perspective of, like, assisted suicide, you know, for or euthanasia for somebody who no longer has quality of life. I can understand that. That, to me, isn't right. But I think that when you're talking about somebody who has a reasonably good quality of life and can still do for themselves, if they tell you something like that, you still kind of have to investigate why, you know, they're feeling
exactly
like that. Because that could just be another excuse, you know, just to cover up what's really going on, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to,
I think sometimes it's fear. You know how some people feel like they've watched everybody die that they,
yeah,
you know, they interact with and they're kind of just tired of life?
Yeah, I think that's, again, like, it depends on the situation. But, like, you know, you really have to examine why somebody is talking like that or about suicide. Like, I feel the same way. Like, if I get to a point where I'm very old and I am no longer in a position where I can, you know, have a reasonable quality of life, I can't live without being on a ventilator or something along those lines, I don't want to go on. You know what I mean?
Right.
Lucky for me and my family, people in my family usually get to a ripe old age where they can still take care of themselves. You know, my grandparents are in their, you know, my grandmother's in her mid-70s, my grandfather's in his late-70s, and they're still getting around. They still take care of themselves. They can still drive everywhere. They can still do whatever they want to do. And hopefully they'll be that way for quite some time to come. You know?
Right.
But, you know, if I were to get much older than they were and I couldn't do that, I wouldn't want to live. Yeah.
Because a lot of times I see, like, when people, if their finances are low and, you know, they didn't make certain decisions in their early ages, you know, to really kind of plan for the future, like, I'm not going to no old folks home. I don't care to, you know, just be in that environment. That's just, you know, which is why, you know, I'm kind of making certain decisions now to make sure that that don't happen should I live long enough. But I think sometimes people just don't, it don't really, retirement and other things don't really hit them until later, and so they feel like they kind of got to catch up a little bit, and, you know, they're limited with resources, income. I mean, it breaks my heart to a certain extent to see older people still working when, you know, but they have to supplement that income because they don't have enough money to survive or take care of themselves.
Right, and that's the reason why I want, you know, I was talking about the program for the older people in the neighborhood that I would like to implement. That's one of the reasons why, but Raina was laughing at me the other day when I told her when I retire, my new job is going to be a greeter at Walmart. Anyway, you know.
I already told you why I don't like Walmart, Tim, so that was one of the reasons right there, but yeah. I'm going to be side-eyeing you when you start working at Walmart.
Seriously. We have a call 972 on the line. 972, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
And we asked you to call.
Yeah. I just kind of just tuned in. I caught you guys about 5 minutes ago. I've been listening to the conversation for the past, like, 5 to 10 minutes. And, I feel like spurts of depression, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. I don't think I'm clinically depressed in the sense of I need to be in an institution somewhere, but...
Well, not everybody's clinically depressed at an
institution. Ma'am?
I was just going to say, not everybody who's clinically depressed has to be in an institution, but go on.
I don't know. For a long time, I guess I've just been depressed and lonely, you know. I'm pretty young. I'm 25, and you know, I'm in school, and things are looking better than they were for the past few years. Just, I don't know what it is. It seems like it's just something missing, and I mean, I don't want to die per se, but I mean, I'm just at the point right now to where I just don't see anything good coming in the near future. I feel like I'm just, it's just like the tediousness, and I don't know, I just feel like I'm just stuck, you know, and it's just like, okay, I'm a late bloomer for one, you know, I never went to high school, it's my first time in college, so all that experience that normal person of that age will go through, I missed all that, and I guess in a sense I'm trying to play catch up with certain things, but it's kind of too late in my mind for certain things.
No.
And now it's like, no, I'm just getting to work, and it's just like, oh, it's just work and school and just whatever else is secondary or whatever after that. And it's just like, man, I have a plan and everything. You know, my plan is to get my degree in video technology and go off and do something with that. But it's just like, man, I'm going to be here for the next 2-3 years. Math is kicking my ass. I mean, I haven't seen any of this stuff in like 5 years. Just failed the test. I mean, that happens. I mean, I'm not going to blow my brains out over that. But, I mean, it's multiple things. You know what I mean? I never had a girlfriend in my life. That's not to say I'm a 25-year-old virgin or anything, or I have a problem with, or I have intimacy issues or anything. It's just I've never been able to establish a relationship, something meaningful. It's a multiple amount of family issues. I mean, I know there are people out there, you know, who haven't even eaten last night and have gone through worse and are going through worse, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
watch their family die and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I don't know.
Well, the first thing I want to tell you is that you're not in a race with anybody.
Right.
That's the first thing you got to know. You're not in a race with anybody. You know, things happen in our lives, and, you know, you sound like you're doing a lot of the right things. So just be encouraged by the fact that you're doing the right things. You're just changing your life. A lot of people, they get stuck in the point where they think it's too late for everything, and they never end up doing anything because to them they've already quit, they've already lost, they've already checked out. You know what I mean? So just give yourself some credit for doing the right thing, first off. And second, I mean, the only other thing I can tell you is that it sounds to me like you really should investigate, you know, some of the resources that you have available to you. Like being in school, you know, you have access to, you know, free counseling, you know. They always have a counseling center and tutors and all of those sorts of things. And there's all sorts of, you know, activities in college. I mean, for people at all levels, you know, there's usually an untraditional student type, you know, social group or hangout,
right.
Or you can find people who are interested in things that you're interested in, hang out with them. You know, I think maybe, like, you should probably, you know, take advantage. I mean, because you're in a good position to take advantage of these things, take advantage of them while you can, you know. And, you know, and if you need any assistance with finding other things, you know, there's Kim, myself, you know, other, you know, people in the Black Panther family and online can help you.
Can I say something?
Sure, go ahead.
I was listening to, you know, saying my man here and everything, and I felt with similar thoughts that it's too late for things, you know. And I'm not going to, you know, relate my whole life story again, but a lot of the things that happened kind of delayed a lot of the things that I felt should have already happened. You know, like it's almost like I've entered into certain things in a later time in life, and it's like I felt like I was delayed by those things, but You're only as restricted as your mind allows you to be. If you don't think of the restrictions, then see, that's my problems. As long as I stop thinking about the restrictions or stop believing that there are any restrictions, I can do anything I want. It's my own mind that's preventing me from doing anything better than, you know, saying what I believe I should be doing. Instead of, you know, sometimes you gotta think of where you are and where you're at, and be appreciative that it is not any worse, and then work, and then try to realize that there are a lot of things that I can do on my own to improve those things, improve my lot in life, improve, and stop thinking about what I haven't gotten, what I could be attaining, you know.
Yeah, and but, you're a young man, it's not too late, you know, and, you know, even though you started a little bit later than you feel that you should have, the fact of the matter is that you just started. You know, you have people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s going back to school to get their degrees. You're still a young man. You still, you know, have a whole lot of life ahead of you. And, you know, you're trying to achieve your goals and, you know, you're reaching out for help, and Raina is right. You know, you're in college, so they do have the counseling available to you. They have the health care available to you. They have tutoring. You just have to go and sign up for the tutoring to help you with, you know, I believe you said math. You know, all of that is available. They have social groups in which you'll be able to, you know, meet someone, you know, that may you may be interested in, and, you know, you who knows how that may develop. I mean, you have quite a few options ahead of you, and you seem like a really intelligent young man. You know, definitely, if you're not Facebook friends with Raina and I, please reach out and we'll friend you. But, you know, if we are, inbox me, and or Raina or anyone else on the panel. You have a bunch of people here. And, again, we'll be happy to redirect you to some resources if that's what you need, or even just to say hi every once in a while, you know, let you know that we care, because we do. But you have a lot of life ahead of you, and you're on the right track. Raina and Mario are both correct. You're on the right track. You know, there's nothing there to stop you, you know, so, you know, achieve those goals, you know, no shame.
Yeah, I think you're doing the right things. You should be, I mean, you sound like you have a lot to be happy about and a lot to be proud of, you know, so, you know, focus on those things, you know.
And I'm really trying, and a lot of what you're saying, and I'm really taking it in and listening to it, is you know, and I can make excuses all day about why I feel I can't do this and do that. But when it comes down to it, it's all on me. And like how my buddy said, it just depends on how you just look at the situation. And, you know, I take that in. But at the end of the day,
well,
I'm still human.
You know what? I just
want
you to know, it's not all on you. You can build friends, and you can build relationships, and you can build people who can support you. You need it, you know what I mean? So don't feel like you have to take everything on by yourself. You know, there are people in your life that care about you, so you can lean on those people for support too when you don't feel like you can do it on your own.
I really do try to reach out, but I mean, you know, it's like they said in this Far Side song. I mean, you know, your friends got problems of their own. Like, nobody wants to hear you complain, you know, sound all morbid all the time, and not to say that I do, because I'm very outgoing, but I mean, and I try as less as I can to inconvenience people with my problems and stuff like that, and
well,
I really don't stay down for too long.
Your friends, you need to find new friends, but you know, what else are friends and family for if you can't go to them when you have a problem, you know what
this
I mean?
Is
I can't even talk to my
right.
family about certain things.
That's right.
Family that
you
I
know,
do
if
have.
If your friends got you, man, they got you, man. If
you're right,
transported
we,
to have
you
your back.
You can't think of yourself as an inconvenience. You can't think of yourself as an inconvenience. You have to.
Right.
You know, the people who are in your life, either they support you or they don't support you. You know? And that's
right.
why sometimes the best family is the family that we make for ourselves.
Exactly. Exactly. And like I said, you know, you have us. We have no issue. I have people calling me all the time. And, you know, Raina gets people that call her. Mario has people calling him. And, you know, we all do. And, you know, we have time for one another. And we encourage and motivate one another. And, you know, again, you're perfectly welcome to reach out to any of us at, you know, any time with me. Sometimes it's hard for me to get back immediately. So, you know, don't take it personal. I have a very, very busy life. But I make time for people. And, you know, we'll make time for someone just... Yeah, so we have Giordano on the line here. Giordano, are you there?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
By the way, I go by Giordano Bruno on Facebook. Some of you all know me, but my real name is Conrad, so I'll just toss that out to you guys who know me. I wanted to say something about that guy that said he had intimacy issues at 25 years old. I really do hope he gets over that. You know, love is a huge thing that really helps make life worthwhile, and it really, especially in the atheist freethinker community, when we don't have things like heaven and God and Jesus and all these other things to look up to, sometimes just having another person as part of your life and to experience something beyond yourself really changes the whole outlook and viewpoint on life. So I really hope he gets over that and finds a solution to that. So let me throw that out there first. But I wanted to talk about suicide. I have on occasion battled with depression, and I'm 45 years old right now, and I have said on multiple occasions to friends and family members as I grew older my wish to commit suicide. Now, it has never been based on depression or sadness. I know it's going to sound strange or if I'm going to put it properly, but it's more of a logical thing whereby I understand everything is temporary, there's no ultimate meaning to life other than what we make of it, what we choose to make of it, how we choose to enjoy it, and the love that we enjoy. But I can't stop but understand the fact that ultimately it's all pointless. So that being said, I learned what I needed to learn about evolution, the history of cosmology, the Big Bang, the universe, and so many things that I have gotten to the point where from here on out, it just seems like I'm killing time until I'm waiting. I'm just going to work every day, paying my bills, enjoying my life. Don't get me wrong. Go to movies, hang out with friends, you know, this and this and that. But it occasionally strikes me that this is all just a matter of killing time. And sometimes I feel like I'm done. I'm over it. I don't feel it's like playing a game Monopoly with your parents. You know, whoever gets to the actual end of a game of Monopoly, nobody. You wind up giving up because it takes forever to get to the end. So I just feel sometimes like I wish I could just put a bullet through my head and just end it now and stop playing the game.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
Some people think that way and have a. How do you feel about that kind of an attitude?
Is it like a series of distractions before you die?
Yes, exactly. You know, that's the most brilliant thing, because that's exactly how I phrased it, is all I feel like is what I'm doing is trying to find continual distractions to keep me going. Yes, exactly, 100%. That's very good way of looking at it, from my perspective.
The tediousness.
I
can say is I find that unfortunate. I think that it's really hard.
It's hard
to resist.
You know, I can actually kind of see where you come from on that, because I once had the idea, you know, I've never been severely depressed to the point of suicide. But, you know, I've actually had the, you know, idea that, you know, really, what's the point, you know, to this whole thing? I guess it's one of the reasons why I kind of never really had the idea of suicide, but I was kind of apathetic. It was like, what is the point? I'm going to do all this stuff. Eventually, I'm going to die anyway. There's not really much I can do about that. So, you know, in the end, you know what I'm saying, what am I trying to do? Well, I suppose that what I'm trying to do is leave behind a legacy, and at least before I check out, know that I have accomplished something in life to help somebody, to provide somebody with some means of comfort that maybe I didn't even have myself. You know what I'm saying? Donating to this AIDS walk or helping somebody who needed the money to pay their rent. You know, that person is going to always remember that. That person is always going to remember you helping them carry their bag or something like that. Maybe life isn't exactly, you know, saying the way we want it to be, and a lot of us are in a life that is not like roses and stuff like that. But just because your life isn't going the way you want doesn't mean you cannot impact someone else's life. You can't help somebody else in their life. And you can't provide some form of temporary happiness, even if for a moment in that person's life.
I do. I mean, I provide. It's funny because I have an ex-girlfriend who, 10 years ago, she moved back to Wisconsin, and she struggles with suicide. And it's kind of funny because whenever she calls me and she's feeling those thoughts, I kind of act as her therapist to try to talk her out of it. Meanwhile, I have those same thoughts. The difference is she has children, okay? I do not have children. So I try to encourage her to keep on going because she has children and a responsibility and this and this and that. One of the things that has held me back from actually doing it is because my mother buried my father in 2005 when he died from cancer. And I swore to myself that my mother was not going to have to bury her son. So that's one of the things that's kept me going is I look at the other people around me and how they will suffer because they love me. And if I decide to check out, regardless of how logical the reason might have been to me, these people are going to suffer for it. So that's one of the other things that keeps me going. So that's why I probably won't ever do it, but it is a thought that's constantly in my mind, and I just really don't see overall why a human being who has come to that decision, who has, does not have a medical disorder, does not have treatable disease, who just has logically come to the conclusion that, hey, you know what, this is my life, my choice, I'm done and I want to check out. I don't see why that person does not or should not have the right to do so, given that their life only belongs to themselves.
Wow.
And that's interesting you said that because, I mean, I felt the same way. It's family and it's people who you feel like you're leaving them behind. And then with me, I feel like it's a pride thing. I don't really give satisfaction to the world, feeling like I was defeated by the world by going ahead and checking out. You know, I think it'd be selfish in a sense too. But then at the same time, it's like I don't want to inconvenience anybody else with my bickering and my complaining. You know, I just feel like that. Now this isn't thoughts that plague me all the time, a lot. It's just in the back of my mind sometimes, especially when I'm just feeling stressed out.
Yeah, it's that little, I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry, sir, I don't mean to interrupt you, but it is. It's that little tickle in the back of your brain that you just can't seem to get rid of. And I do try to make other people's lives better. My girlfriends, my friends, all of them have said that I've taught them things and made them see things and realize things about themselves, life, and about the universe, but they would not have known had it not been for my companionship. So I do try to live my life as somebody who the best way I can live my life is to make the lives of other people better than they are and make their lives more enriched. But ultimately, once I sink back down into the core of me, I find facts. You know what I mean? And I'm done. And so it's something I struggle with, but I wanted to throw it out there because, you know, this episode is about suicide and depression, and I just kind of wanted to draw that line that cuts away the depression from suicide because some of us want to die just for the sake of being done, and depression really does not have a lot to do with it. It's tragic for those who are depressed because they are doing it because their brain is... They're not in control, and their suicide stems from something that may be treatable. Whereas someone like me, you can't treat me. You can't change me. I mean, this thought in my head, I'm either going to do it or I'm not. And that's going to be my decision.
Yep.
Well, I kind of disagree with something that was said, though. When it was said that, you know, your life belongs to you, if you have people who care about you, who care about your well-being, and who care about seeing you, your life also belongs to them because you impact those people as well. You know, your life is, you know, life
good
ain't
point.
Supposed, I don't think that life is supposed to be happy. I think that we actually grow our character through some forms of misery because we had no idea what a hard time was. We wouldn't know how to evolve and grow from it. You know, if you live all your life in a pristine, rich society that knew no poverty, that knew no disease, when you finally found yourself in one of those societies, you wouldn't know what to do. You actually lose your mind. You know what I'm saying? So when you have these problems, you have these these troubles in your life, get, you know, there are ways to cope with them. There are ways to adapt to them. And one of the ways is to remember that anything you do to yourself is also going to be done to the people who care about you and who don't want to hurt,
right.
want you hurt.
Right, and I did mention that earlier. That one of the things that holds me back is I don't want my mother to have to bury her son. I don't want my sister or my brother or my ex-girlfriends or my friends to have to come to my funeral, even though I know ultimately they're going to die sooner or later. And 5 billion years from now, the sun is going to expand, the red giants swallow the earth, and we're all going to be gone. And in the overall scheme of things, it means nothing. But yes, on the short-term basis, the loss of me to the people who care about me will hurt them. And I don't want to hurt the very same people that I tried so hard to love and be there for all these years. So it's a weird dichotomy, but the thought nevertheless remains in my brain. So I just wanted to share that, and I'm reading some of the chats in the chat room, you know, some of the people that are agreeing and or disagreeing with me. But, you know, this is how I personally feel. So I just wanted to throw that out there, kind of a different angle, whole perspective. And I guess, you know, for time constraints, I'll go ahead and sign off now and allow another caller to come.
I appreciate that. And I just want to say one more thing, and I'll leave it to this. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I just want to say one more thing.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. What did you say?
No, I just wanted to say one more thing on that note. You know, to make a long story short, I also did a short prison bid of 3 years when I was 17, and I was already depressed. I was in a state of depression before I went to prison, and they charged me as an adult. It was a petty crime, and I did 3 years. And the whole 3 years, I cannot really remember being that depressed. I mean, I was depressed, of course, for being confined, like any normal person would feel, or, you know, a sense of claustrophobia.
Right.
But if anything, I actually had high hopes for when I came home, you know, because I had so many plans of how things... Now, I knew everything wasn't going to be Peter Pan Disney movie, but I just had such high hopes. And then when I come home, I've been home 5 years now, I come home and it's like I just come home to just mediocrity. And I know, like I said, I know things weren't going to be a peachy thing when I first came home. I know it was going to be a struggle, and things are getting better. Yes, they are, since in comparison to when I first came home. However, it's just the same thing over and over and over. And it's just, I mean, maybe it's my impatience, but I mean, it's just like, what more else do I have to do to become a normal person? What more else
and
do
you know,
I have
it's
to
funny, and
do
I can't, to be normal? I can't personally relate to your situation, but I do in a way understand. And let me ask you, if a certain level of guilt comes along with it. I mean, here I am. Now, I'm not very successful. I have a 900 square foot apartment. I have nothing saved for my retirement. I have a halfway decent job, and I'm 45 years old, and I have these thoughts. But meanwhile, there are people in third world countries literally struggling day by day just to live, just to exist one more day. And to them, life is a precious, precious thing that they struggle and fight for every day. And here I sit with my cable TV and my internet and my, you know,
water and bread,
cranberry, and enjoying my life, and here I am saying it's not worth it. I'm bored. I'm going to check out. Meanwhile, there's somebody on the other side of the earth who would give everything to have what I have, and it brings a certain guilt to me. You know, when I have these thoughts.
And on that note, we're down to the last minute of the show, and Giordano, thank you so much, young man. You know, we're pulling for you. Like I said, you know, you can inbox us. And we're going to have to talk, you know, a little bit more about this, and we're going to have to do another show. And
all right. I love you. I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, baby. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Love you back. We'll schedule another show about, you know, suicide and depression. But again, you know, I've the resources on my page.
It's a good topic.
You can find the information
there. Yeah,
it's
a good topic. It's very
fun. Yeah, definitely. It's very much so neat. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
And again, guys, we're doing the fundraiser for Chip In, you know, for the show. I put the link back in the room, link it on the wall. Contribute if you can. If not, we understand, but, you know, we want to expand the network. On that note, we love you. Know that. Have a good weekend.